All right, we're continuing on with our CLR .NET 4.5 investigation. Eric St. John?
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
So, what do you do?
So, I work on the .NET Framework setup team.
Mm-hmm.
We work on producing packages for the .NET Framework to install at DOM level on Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008. And we also build the setup manifest that get inserted into Windows so that .NET can be installed as part of the operating system.
Excellent. So one of the things that we were going to talk about in this conversation is reducing reboots when installing mm-hmm. one of these packages.
Yes. So we did work in .NET 4.5 mm-hmm. so that our redistributable, the package that we ship down level, will cause less reboots. So .NET 4.5 is an in-place update of .NET 4.0. So that means that all the files that were present in .NET 4.0 get replaced by .NET 4.5. We did this in order to improve compatibility. So we're not a new side-by-side version. Mm-hmm. We're a new in-place compatible version. And this is good for our developers because it means you can take an app that you've already built with .NET 4.0 and just rebuild against .NET 4.5 and make use of all the new features and all the new surface area we introduced. Mm-hmm. But for setup, it's a bad thing because we've got a lot of .NET 4 apps out there. .NET 4 apps obviously use the .NET 4 framework and files in the framework. And so when we want to update those files, there's a good chance that they're in use. Mm-hmm. So the way that Windows handles files in use is it will try and replace the file. So files allow for there's a sharing setting that will allow a file to be renamed, and applications that have an open handle, that file still keep the open handle to the file and can still read from that file. So the file can be renamed from out from under them, and the file can be replaced. But when this happens, Windows Installer will note that it was only able to rename the file, not replace it, and it will schedule a reboot operation in order to close that running application. Otherwise, that application is in a torn state, susceptible to dynamically loading new files that are from the new framework, because it's still going to load from the framework directories, and it could potentially have a mismatch, one file from version 4.0 and one file from version 4.5. There's also a more serious instance of this problem, and that's when the file is hardlocked, so the installer can't even replace it at that time, and it will schedule the replacement to happen after the reboot. And so in this circumstance, your machine is in a state where it's torn. So if you tried to load files from the framework directory, you would get some that were from 4.0 and some that were from 4.5.
Sure.
So when setup asks you to reboot, it's serious.
Yes.
In the case of, especially in the case of machine torn state, because that means that any app that you launch at that point might crash. There's the process torn state, which is still kind of serious. Depends on what processes we're using that. And since the installer can't make a judgment call on that, it will still ask you to reboot. So you might have a mission critical app that you don't want to crash, or a system critical service that you don't want to crash. So the reboot will let you safely shut that down, and then when it comes back up, it'll be running on the fresh new bits.
Nice.
So, we have this problem in 4.5 that we're doing a lot of this replacement, and since we're a framework, we have lots of apps, lots of different apps that might have part of us in use. In the past, let's see, Windows Installer used to, or still does, they have functionality to try and prevent this. At first it was the files in use dialog that use performance counters in Windows to find out which applications were using certain modules. It was limited to modules. And then in Vista, they added Restart Manager, which is a much more rich support, which could detect any files in use, any apps using any file. And it also provided the ability to close those apps down. So before in Files in Use, it would just notify you, and then you had to go close the apps and then refresh the dialog, and then maybe you get further, or eventually you just choose to ignore. Restart Manager lets you do a lot more. So the setup application could detect many any application using any type of file, and then it provided predictable, stable way of shutting down the apps. A safe way, a way that doesn't, say, like, kill the process. The apps are given messages that tell them the session is ending. It's well documented how these messages come. The app can freeze dry itself, can save state, so that when the app's later restarted, it can come back to the same state. For instance, the browser will save a list of all the tabs it has open.
Yep.
So a Restart Manager provides this rich support. Now, in .NET 4, we didn't use it. We didn't use it because we were a side-by-side release, so we weren't replacing any files. We were putting down all new files. Prior to that, in .NET 2, 3.0, 3.5, there were some files being replaced, but at that time, we still supported Windows XP, where Restart Manager isn't supported. And there were also a lot of... should I call it, weird apps that would show up. You're a framework, so everybody uses you. So everybody, including OS components, system-critical components. So you would have, if we were to turn this on back in 3.0.3.5, you would see apps in your list that you were scared about shutting down, especially that end consumers, the people installing our setup, would be pretty scared about shutting down. So that was a problem. And most of the time, these apps, these esoteric or system-critical apps, the scary apps, they wouldn't really be using the full framework. They'd just be loading, say, one of our native pieces of code to get notified when some other app launches managed code, or they might be using our performance counters, things that we could make some assumptions about around... torrent state. So we'll get to that a little bit later. So that's why it wasn't used in the past. In 4.5, we really wanted to do something to reduce reboots, because we knew it would be a problem. We wanted to give the best experience to our end users, and also to the applications that redistribute the framework. We wanted to make it easier for them, because it's really hard for a client application to handle a reboot in their setup, because the application's running. They install the new framework. They need the new framework not just to run, but to install their own bits. And so they can't defer that reboot. They have to take it. And so this is a really hard thing for apps to do, and we wanted to reduce that impact. So we added Restart Manager support to the framework. Now, some might say, well, it was already in MSI, and you use MSI. What does it mean that you added it? What did you really do? Mm-hmm. So we actually didn't use MSI's Restart Manager support. The reason why we didn't is because we wanted to have richer control of the resource lists that we registered. So in 4.0, some folks may or may not know, but the framework is made up of many packages. So it was made up of an MSU that installed some OS components. It was made up of a client profile MSI that installed the smaller client profile portion of the framework. And then there was the extended MSI that installed compilers, ASP.NET, and less commonly used pieces of the framework. So if we were to use MSI's Restart Manager, first of all, it wouldn't work for the OS components. Because CBS, the technology that installs the OS updates, doesn't provide any sort of Restart Manager functionality. The MSIs would provide this functionality, but they provide it asynchronously in the middle of the sequence. So what you would see is you would get halfway through installing a framework, and you might see a pop up, and if you had walked away to get coffee or something, that pop-up would be there, preventing your install from completing, and You know, it just wouldn't have been a good thing. And they call it a jagged UI experience or a jagged user experience because it's not a consistent flow. You're getting information from the user, then they're sitting and waiting, then you're getting more information. It was bad. So that wasn't acceptable. So what we did is we rolled everything up. We gathered lists of all the resources that all of our packages would install, and aggregated that in a manifest for the .NET Framework setup. We already have a manifest. We just extended it and put more information in it. And then we created our own Restart Manager session and registered all those resources. So that let us do one single check up front to find out, at the beginning when you're asking the user to accept the EULA and everything, what applications they might need to close. So that was the first thing we did. In addition, we found that there are critical things involved in setup that would often use framework files. So MSI, the service that we use to install our packages itself, will use MSI because it needs to install assemblies. So if we didn't do something about it, we would get messages that said, hey, your installer engine that you're using to install needs to be shut down, or this could cause a reboot. In addition to that, our installer itself would load the framework files because it has download capability. So if it tried to download an exe, well, exes are registered with a MIME filter, and that MIME filter would invoke the framework to determine if it was framework binary. So it's an old feature that was used back in 3.0.3.5 to handle, I think, some click-once scenarios and other in-browser managed code scenarios. So we had those would have been blockers if we didn't have a way of dealing with them, because you can't shut yourself down. You don't want to tell the user that hey, you have to shut down the application that you're running, the application that's asking you, what do you want to shut down apps? It looks really silly. So we had to provide functionality to ignore these applications too. So we had to ignore ourselves, ignore the MSI service, and a few other things. And we did our due diligence to make sure, we were already shutting these things down afterwards, regardless. So it wasn't like we were introducing risk with new torn state around these processes. But those were the reasons why we couldn't use the existing functionality, why we had to build something new. So even after doing all that, we still had cases where there were applications that would either we either couldn't shut them down because they were critical to the system. Explorer is an example. The shell will always load parts of the framework in order to handle click-once shortcuts, in order to handle MSI advertise shortcuts, in order to handle one other piece there. But basically, they would always load parts of the framework. And we had to do investigations into... So they would always load one particular file in the framework. And we knew that this file would likely be okay if it was in torrent state. So it'd be okay to have the 4.0 version with the rest, if that was the only thing in the process, along with the rest of the 4.5 frameworks. So basically, we agreed that we weren't going to change that file, that one commonly used file, in 4.5. Or if we did change it, the changes would only be additive and wouldn't cause any compatibility problems with the. So folks on the rest of the CLR team did a deep dive into this file, our shim file, MS Core EI, and made took tremendous care to make sure that it would be okay to ignore this file if it was the only file in use. So that helped get rid of that large set of apps that we could just never shut down. And then for those, we had to do more work in order to make that happen. So we had to ignore those resources from our list. That's the one simple thing. But then, when MSI actually encountered those files in use during the installation of of the framework. We had to then go and check and find out what applications had those files in use at that time.
Wow.
And make sure that at that point that it was safe to ignore. And then we keep track of this state, and at the very end of the install, we would make sure that, or we would know that if the only files in use were these files that, that we decided were safe to ignore, we would then basically turn the restart required return code into success. We would say, yes, the installer engine told us we needed to restart, but we did extra work to determine that all the applications running that were using the files that couldn't be replaced are okay to remain in the in this state.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, we're already getting data back that it's saving people reboots.
Great.
Right now the biggest thing that's actually saving people reboots is that ignore feature, because on many people's machines, when they're installing something, they won't have all these other applications running that might interfere with the setup. For good or bad, the framework setup is kind of a heavy thing. It does a lot of file copies, and it will do actual compilation of the managed assembly. So people tend to run it on its own. So at least the data we're getting back is that the most helpful feature is this ignore thing, which ignores a lot of these system processes that would otherwise cause the reboot. One of the challenges with the framework is that we're not often run on our own. So that work we did to expose the UI to the user and say, hey, we found these applications, would it be okay if we close them? Doesn't help us for the majority of our customers. Because most time, if you have a well-behaved application, it's not going to say, hey, I need the .NET framework, go off and download it, and then come back later. Usually it will provide a better experience to their customer, where it says, this is paint.net setup, I'm going to install everything I need to run, or this is Visual Studio setup, I'll install everything I need to run. And so they like to provide that consolidated experience, so they'll never even show us, show our dialogue. So we had to do some more in order to make those other applications, our developer customers, mm-hmm. Get benefit from this. And so we did a couple things. One thing, the low cost thing, was we provided a way for our setup to run such that it showed only our blocking dialog, only our restart manager dialog. So they could still run us in quiet mode, and they could still get the restart manager behavior without implementing any UI. It would just use our UI and pop up that dialog. So the user would be installing VS setup. VS isn't using this right now, I'm just using it as an example. But would be installing VS setup and would see the .NET framework dialog come up. And it would be relatively seamless. There's not much branding on our UI. But for folks who like to take total control over the install experience for their app, more like VS, we provided an additional feature in our shared memory communication protocol. So our setup has a shared memory file, which you can launch the setup with the poorly named pipe argument. Okay. It's not a pipe, it's a shared file, but
okay.
When you launch the .NET framework setup with this, there's a file created that has a well-defined structure, which we document on MSDN, that's used as our communication protocol between external processes. So before this was just a sort of a dumb structure. There wasn't any synchronization around access to it. It only had one writer. .NET framework setup would be the only thing writing to this file, and external parties, I'll say with one exception. External parties would read progress from this file. The one exception was they would be able to write a single byte that indicated cancel, and that wasn't synchronized before because the assumption was the cancel they would be the only party writing to that region of the file, and it was okay if we read that byte in one pass, they wrote it, and we were still writing to another portion. They did some work before to determine that was okay, but the addition we made to this was we added the ability to pass messages. And so we added an additional field to the structure that indicated a message code, and then depending on what message code, there was a variable length region at the end of that structure to pass the messages data. And so now we have a much richer protocol, but one that we need synchronization around because we don't want people reading the message code at the same time we're writing the large variable length region of data. They'll get incomplete data that may get unterminated strings. Mm-hmm. And so we added additional synchronization to that protocol and then plumbed that through our sample code and so on and so forth. So the end result is that we can communicate a message to external applications that says, hey, we have found files in use. We need you to ask the user if it's okay to shut down these applications. So we provide a list of applications, and we accept a response from the setup. So this allows, and it's just kind of parity with what MSI provides, but we do it around our whole package. So the benefit here now is that before, when they wouldn't get these messages from the framework, now they'll get them, and we can behave just as any other MSI in their setup. So
cool.
If they have, you know, .NET framework and two other MSIs they're installing, they all provide files and use messages and the ability to shut down applications that might eventually cause a reboot of the system.
Good.
So. And that's not where it ends.
Oh, man. So, it's hard. It's a hard world. All right.
There's a lot involved.
Yeah.
And I'm talking too much now, but
that's fine. That's good.
Just stop me if it gets to if I get off track. In addition to providing this protocol and sample code that uses the protocol, we plumbed the protocol through a it's sort of a pick-up-and-use extensible chainer that's in the Wix project. Wix is Windows Installer XML. And in the past, they were just a tool set for producing MSIs. They let you create some authoring files in XML that let you describe an MSI database. And so they provided a nice way that you could write source code to produce your MSI. There are other solutions out there, but this one's closest to the developer because it's, you know, you're working with XML source as opposed to some UI designer, or if you were to just read the Windows SDK, you would only have VBScript and MSI functions for creating databases. So it's a nice tool set. It's pretty widely used, but it had a big gap. MSIs on their own don't really provide a nice user experience. So you may have multiple MSIs if you have packages from different parties. They don't provide very rich UI. Mm-hmm. They don't provide... the UI is kind of circa 1997. Didn't even support hyperlinks up until recently. So most of the time, people, when building MSIs, they still need to build a wrapping bootstrapper or chainer in order to combine multiple packages and provide a better user experience. There are a few different solutions for doing this that don't involve writing code. You can use Install Shield, which provides a bootstrapper. Visual Studio also has the ClickOnce bootstrapper, which has a very minimal UI. But there wasn't a good pick-up-and-use extensible solution. So Wix created burn, which is a extensible chainer. So they provide an engine, and you build a user experience on top of that engine. They also provide a couple of canned user experiences that lets you configure those canned user experiences in a way that just involves some setup authoring without running code.
Cool.
Custom user experience, you'd have to write code to do so. You implement an interface and respond to messages with the engine, and then you display UI as you get messages. So what we did is we built a feature into the Burn engine that allows you to specify a protocol for an XE, and that protocol would be .NET Framework 4. And then we built the consumer for that shared memory protocol I talked about earlier into Burn. So when you're using Burn, it would, and you chain in the .NET Framework setup package, it would look just like your other packages. It would push messages up to your user experience in the same way that you see from an MSI and other things, and it would provide you those messages, and you could respond to them all in the same manner. So that way, we provide a... because the consumer for that shared memory protocol is not simple code to write. It's synchronization. You have to deal with lots of casting between different structure types. It's low-level native C code. And with Burn, you can write much higher-level C++, or even a managed boot. Well, you don't really want a managed bootstrapper when you're installing the framework, but you could if you wanted to, if you wrote against a previous version. So
C++ is high-level enough for that. Cool.
Yeah. So, that's in a gist the feature. In addition to this, we did a lot of instrumentation to get an idea of what files applications use, what files tend to cause reboots for the framework, and also what applications tend to cause those reboots. So we have some instrumentation around that, so that we can find those sorts of things and maybe work with those teams, especially for the hard lock cases, when we find instances of applications which hard lock our files, because those not only cause a problem for the upgrade to .NET 4.5 and the reboot there, they can also cause problems with patching, and nobody likes additional reboots during patching. Mm-hmm. So it's always a frustration when you come in Wednesday morning after Patch Tuesday and your machine is rebooted with all your apps lost. So this instrumentation we put in there will help us identify those apps that are causing that behavior, and hopefully we work with those teams or external parties to get them to open our files in a more friendly way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's really interesting. I mean, you said you've already gotten telemetry from the real world based on the developer preview.
Yeah.
And you've clearly seen that this stuff is working.
It's helping. We'd like it to help a lot more than it does, but you can only do so much with an in-place update.
Sure.
We found that the data that's come back has said that when we show people that there are apps that they need to close, if they don't close them, 100% of the time it's causing a reboot. We've seen that when we show people the dialogue and they do decide to close the apps, mm-hmm. we're able to prevent that reboot over 85% of the time. It's only 85% because some of those apps are tenacious. Mm-hmm. They have watcher processes, so when you shut them down, and they don't behave well with restart managers, so that when they're shut down, they'll restart. Mm-hmm. Things like, one of them is actually internal that we're going to be working mm-hmm. with them. Working with the team on, but there are other apps that are tenacious like that. When you shut them down, they don't stay shut down.
Tenacious apps. Like
yeah,
that.
And it's also it's. I think part of it too is user perception. They don't want to any perception of being forced to close apps, it's seen as downtime. Even though your system is still functional, you can't use that application that was shut down. Mm-hmm. And so we were really concerned with that when we implemented this feature. We had to deal with a trade-off between, okay, we want all that user experience up front to avoid that jagged edge where, you know, there's a little bit of interaction, wait some time, more interaction, wait some time. But so there's that goal is to prevent that jagged experience, but we also want to limit the user's downtime. Mm. If we have to close the browser, that's, you know, maybe 5 minutes where the user can't be doing what they do for their primary action on their machine. So that most people interact with the browser. The browser often has .NET framework files in use. If we shut it down, that's that person's machine is not useful for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. So we looked at trade-offs, and what we ended up doing was putting that dialogue after we do the all the download, all the downloading, all the verification of the file signatures, and right before we install the first package. And this trade-off gives people the when using our redistributable package, the package that bundles everything, they still get a pretty smooth user experience because that download is non-existent. The signature verification is pretty short on most modern PCs, so it's pretty consistent. And then in the case where they have to wait a while for the files to download, they're not stuck with that long period of downtime. We didn't ask them to shut down their apps before we started downloading files. We waited. We still weren't happy with the with that because it's that jagged user experience, that long pause and then an ask for input. So we put a timeout on the dialogue that said, you know, if we don't get a response after we open it for 3 minutes, then we'll just proceed and not shut down any apps. Mm-hmm. So that way, if someone, you know, went off to the restroom and mm-hmm. or went off to lunch mm-hmm. and they come back and expect the framework to be installed, we still satisfy that expectation. They're not stuck on a dialogue where we haven't even done anything yet.
Sure.
So yeah, there were.
It's a seriously complicated business. I mean, you're what would you call? You're sort of your if map. I mean, your map of potential ways to go seems pretty insane.
Yeah, and we have very little. You know, it's when you look at our UI or our application, you think, oh, that's pretty simple. It's just a wizard, but everybody goes through this mm-hmm. this pattern. So it's like a really hot path. So we have to think very carefully about every decision we make along that path.
Decision tree. Thank you.
Yeah. Decision tree. Yeah. So it, you know, it's always been a. At first, you know, you had these long wizards where you'd install an application and they just say, oh, geez, we'll ask a few more questions up front. And you never really realized how much that bothered users up until, like, you know, people started getting that. People don't like to wait. So the more things you ask the user for up front, although they're simple, easy decisions to make, they have a huge impact on customer satisfaction. So we thought long and hard about all the decisions when we were introducing this new UI that might offend users, or I won't say offend. No, that word was bandied around because dialogues are offensive no matter what they are. It's just, I want to do something, and you're coming in and saying, no, you need information from me before you do something. But yeah, we, I don't know where I was going with that. We had to put a lot of thought.
Yes, so. Of course. And I think most people take setup is one of those things like boot mm-hmm. in Windows generally that most people either don't care about or they get annoyed with, mm-hmm. right? So it takes Windows a long time to boot. Say you just installed something and it has to go through and ensure that everything's, you know, installed correctly and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And setup is the same way. I mean, I think most people don't like setup experience in general. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you have to wait
And secondly, because then you have to wait again after you waited. Mm-hmm. And the wait again is an operation that you're not interested in doing,
yeah.
and that is restarting your whole system.
Yeah.
So a project like this is very important. Your problem is complicated, and I'm glad to see that you've made progress.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how, as more and more people are using 4.5 and upgrading to 4.5,
mm-hmm.
Because right now it's just a developer preview,
mm-hmm.
And the telemetry you get back, you're going to be able to make improvements to your decision tree.
Yeah.
But this is a good step, and I look forward to learning more.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually will learn more when I run your code.
Yeah.
And I'll send you some emails.
Yeah, and what we actually have an ask out to people is that when you do run the .NET framework setup and you see this dialogue, let us know what you think. Let us know if it's showing you any applications that you don't feel comfortable shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of people saying no. Let us know why you say no to that dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's...
You see a lot of people saying no on shutting down an application.
Yes, yeah. And for us, that's like... That trade-off is pretty clear. We're like, well, can I shut down this app, or do I have to restart my whole machine?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's, yeah, I'll shut down the app. But
do you make it clear? So, I mean, one of the things that for your average user, I mean, which is mm-hmm. going to be most people who use computers, better guidance, right? To give me a list of, so I've seen, you know, you're not the only installer that will tell me, hey, I'm not going to continue unless I shut these 5 applications down, because, quite honestly, I'm being used in memory there already, mm-hmm. so I have to get out, mm-hmm. or at least the stuff I'm trying to load.
Yeah.
Better guidance as to, for example, in your case, App X is something that maybe I'm using on a different monitor
mm-hmm.
that I may not be aware that's even a managed app, because, again, I'm just a user. You have to be able to let somebody know. Maybe if you clicked on that app for more information, it could say, hey, look, here's a situation.
Mm-hmm.
The following DLLs are loaded in memory. I mean, and that might be too much for your average user, but for the geeks out there, and people yeah. who might be curious, it could be sort of, tell me what, you know, why yeah. should I shut this?
Yeah, so we do have that information of it. Well, some
of it. You have it available?
Some of it. The Restart Manager API just takes a full large set of files and gives us back a list of processes. We don't have a mapping between which individual resources, which individual files map to which specific processes.
Mm-hmm.
So all we really know is that one of our, you know, 500 files were in use by that.
Okay.
So that's a Windows limitation. We still try and do more, though, from the geeky side of things. So we get back some information from Restart Manager. We try and take that information and find what's going to be the most accessible identifier for that app. What's going to be closest to what the user thinks that app is. Mm-hmm. So rather than, say, the path to the XE or a process ID, we go and try and match what they might see in the Windows taskbar or in Task Manager.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and looked at what sort of things Windows components do in order to identify the app, and we mimicked that.
Mm-hmm.
And in cases where we don't have that, such as background processes or services, we try and find those friendlier names.
Mm-hmm.
So we have algorithms around how to find the most friendly name for an app. Now, that's what we show in our UI, but we know that our third-party developers, the people who are using that protocol, they might want to build their own friendly UI, so we give them the rich information. We
mm-hmm.
say, we give them our friendly name, we give them process ID, we give them all the metadata that we think they might need to provide sort of like a richer experience. There's also, we provide a refresh button. I know it's a simple feature, but
mm-hmm.
some people don't trust. We found that some folks didn't trust us to shut down the apps. So they're fine with us showing the list, but they want to shut them down themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a good idea, because although Restart Manager support in applications has been around as a software logo requirement since
mm-hmm.
Vista, not a lot of apps do it or do it right. So you might want to go and save your own documents, go off and and say bookmark the tabs or sure. just close the thing yourself so that you're comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And so we do provide that, and the refresh button helps people do that because they can close the app, they can refresh and see the list decrease, and then move on.
But we
did some work to try and make it friendlier. Mm-hmm. We're open to any more feedback around what's missing. Do you want us to categorize apps? Do you want us to provide more data in that dialogue? Mm-hmm. All suggestions welcome. Another ask we have mm-hmm. is that if you don't see our dialogue and you see a reboot, send us your logs. We have a tool called the Visual Studio Log Collection Utility. Don't be frightened by the name. It helps for the framework, too. We pull off all the framework setup logs and Visual Studio setup logs from your machine, and we can analyze those. We have the data that we got. Usually when we don't show the dialogue, it means that there was some critical application that was holding on to some of our files. So that critical application was something we couldn't prompt you to shut down, and when we can't shut down one, we don't bother with the rest because we're still going to have a reboot if that one app's running. So what we try and do is find clever ways to gracefully shut those applications down, or to if those apps are, say, worker processes for a parent app, we try and map it back to the parent and then shut the parent down and use that to resolve the problem. And barring both of those, we could then go and contact that app developer and say, hey, your app's going to cause your customers pain when they need to upgrade to 4.5. Can you help us out?
Cool.
So all those things are what we see, and we're happy to look at any logs that you have. So by all means, send them our way.
Cool. Well, hey, great to meet you, Eric.
Yeah.
And thanks for the detailed information.
Yeah, thank
Good
you.
Work.